You're listening to a Zone Radio podcast, zoneradio.co.za.
This gardening feature is brought to you by Harry Khumans Garden Centre.
Hi, I'm Jeremy, owner of Harry Khumans Garden Centre, and I'd like to invite you to come and experience some genuine retail therapy at our special garden centre, where our friendly and knowledgeable staff are waiting to help you. Come and find the perfect plant, beautiful pot, compost, potting or specialized soils, products to solve a pesky insect or fungal garden infection, and so much more. We strive to have a wide range and fair pricing. We're looking forward to seeing you soon at Harry Khumans Garden Center.
It's 10:30 and time for the Garden Zone with David Parker from Budding Inspirations. Hello, David.
Hello, Jenny Sue. How are you?
As well. And
good.
Welcome back.
Thank you so much. Amazing when you come and you realize how fast time goes every 2 weeks and then it feels like a city. Yeah. I love it, though.
And I know you're extremely busy, especially this time of the year.
We are. Unfortunately, we made a weird decision today. We cancelled because of all these thunderstorm warnings and lightning and that.
I don't
really want to put my guys out there, but I don't know, hey? I'm hoping it comes through at some stage.
Four seasons in a day.
100%. 100%.
Yesterday, on our side, gusting wind. It was miserable. We go to Komiki, beautiful.
Beautiful.
You know? Amazing. Sun, no wind, beautiful.
It's amazing.
Four seasons.
This is a true story, Jenny. So one day, we were at my home just across the road here, and in the front garden was drizzling, and in the back garden there was no rain. I promise you, it's a true story. It's incredible. Cape Town, I tell you. Anyway, so as you know, Jenny, on the first chat of the month, we chat about what to do for the month.
Yes.
We have a long month this month, so we are in March, and obviously, winter rainfall region. And we're going to start off with the usual trees, shrubs, and climbers first and foremost. Now's the time to start putting some good, rich, organic matter back into your ground. It just helps get through winter. It helps everything sustain itself. It says here, dig in some bone meal. I'm a fan of bone meal, but unfortunately, in all the sort of built-up areas we live in, remember, bone meal, dogs and cats love bone meal. So unless you are completely pet-free, you can use something like a organic root enhancer rather, or there's a product that is the same as bone meal, but it's synthesized called superphosphate. That's something good you could dig into the ground as well. And that just phosphates are good for rooting and healthy roots. So that is a substitute if you have animals around. Now's the time to deadhead your flowering shrubs. You should be cutting a node or two back depending on what the flowering is. You can plant evergreens now. So an evergreen tree is something that stays green all year round. It's not deciduous, loses its leaves. So now's a good time to plant. In fact, I always tell my clients, you know, as you know, with the droughts and that, we speak about it quite, you know, all our shows sort of interact with each other, so, as you know. But so with the lack of rain we've had and the council always wanting to watch water, any clients that haven't got irrigation or don't want to spend money on water, I always encourage now between the next 2 months to start doing any planting now, because the weather starts turning on us. It starts getting cooler, obviously drizzles, then it starts raining. And that just helps your plants establish. I always tell clients, you can't plant an indigenous garden in the middle of January or February, our hottest month, even if it's aloes, for example, or succulents, and expect it to just go in straight away. Anything that goes into the ground straight away would need some form of water just to establish itself, you know. Remember, that's what happens in nature. The plants will start sort of emerging from suckers of its own moms or dad wildly when the weather suits it. And then it sustains itself through those dry periods. So.
Because March, it's also quite hot.
March as well. It's our autumn month. It's a sort of borderline, you know. It's humid at the moment, though. But again, Jenny, the weather is just changing. I mean, we know that, you know. It's something incredible. Although I have seen, if you drive around in a few of my clients' gardens, some of the beautiful March lilies. They're those big purple, pinky, round ball looking, but obviously the individual flowers, but they create a ball and a stem. Those are coming up quite sporadically at the moment. They're wild, they're growing, and then they'll flower for March. And they're known as March lilies because they shoot in the middle first of March. So
as you're saying, this is the time to sow the seed.
Of love. We can play that one. So it was here, plant evergreens, prune your fuchsias and take cuttings. Always do love, because remember, fuchsia is, I think we go so sort of obsessed about indigenous planting, but fuchsia is not an indigenous plant, but it is a beautiful plant. It's non-herbaceous, so it's easy to slip, and that's why they talk about cuttings. You know, just cut it, put it into either water or into a bit of soil or cotton wool, and you'll get some roots, and then you can plant it. If you take cuttings of any plants, just a bit of advice. Remember, you never want to keep the flower on the plant. So if the fuchsia is flowering and you need a cutting, if I cut, say, a flower off and I stick that in, all the energy would still be going to try and keep the flower flowering. So it's a bit of a contradictory process. When you plant something new or whatever, you always want to remove any flowers and that, so that the energy can be put to the growth of the root system. You're going to choose trees and shrubs for autumn color. That's obviously a very personal choice. You can go down to our wonderful nursery, Harry Gummins, and get some advice there. They've got a wonderful range of plants at the moment. You can collect fallen leaves and compost or make leaf mold. This is a bit of a strange one as well, and just my own input from all the years. Compost is quite a difficult thing. People don't realize, you know, in nature, it's years and years that it sits, and then as layering happens, it naturally breaks down quicker. Yep. And not only that, in forests and that on the floor, there's microbial insects that actually create the compost. They are worker bees of note for the ground. Remember, we're so sort of non-organic, unfortunately, in our human way, that our gardens don't really have all of that. So if you want to create a compost bin, it's got to – I always laugh because people sort of say, put it right there in the far corner under the trees where nobody can – and the problem is in order for compost to really break down, it really needs a good amount of heat, a good amount of energy. And you go to the compost farms like Flandorp Farm in Takai. The compost pile there, Jenny Sue, is 30 meters by 20 meters and 10 meters high. So what happens is by the time you get to the core of that, it's sitting at like 1,000 degrees Celsius. You know, it's hot in there.
And
that's
ready.
What creates the breaking down process. So there are ways you can go about making your compost break down quicker. Obviously, the smaller the bit you put in, the better. You can get a pellet from Harry Gummins, which encourages fast. It's actually like a reaction that it encourages the breakdown quicker. And to keep it warm is quite important. I always tell my clients to put a piece of black plastic, you can go to the local hardware and buy black plastic that you can put in walls and that. But you just cover it with that. And remember, that absorbs the heat from the sun and helps it get a bit warmer. So those are just some tricks you can do to help your compost break down a little bit faster. Cool, we're going to move on to one of my favorites, as you know, the two things that we shouldn't love the most, I love the most, which frustrates me, but is roses and lawns.
Oh, yes.
Roses being non-indigenous, however, they are worldly, aren't they? They're just absolutely gorgeous.
They are.
You can prepare your compost-rich soil and site for new roses. Water your established roses a lot at the moment. As you said, Jinsy, we've just gone out of summer, so they are still a bit warm. You do want to just keep them watered. Likely feed roses with potassium-rich fertilizer. As we go back to our feeding analytes, NPK, your nitrogen, your phosphate, and your K being potassium. Potassium is a good product for any flowering or fruiting plant. Any flowering fruiting plant needs a yield of potassium for that flower or that fruit to be at its best, hence the fact it mentions potassium. So you would use something like a 315 is a good product to use at the moment.
That's very popular because I always hear you saying the 315.
Yeah, so the 315 is just basically a general – so the 3 stands for the nitrogen, the 1 is the phosphate, the 5 is the potassium. So you can see the potassium is quite high in the concentration. The 1 is quite low because you're not really – if you're feeding a plant for the flowers, it's already established. So the 1 is just low. It just gives a little bit of feedback to the roots. But the 3 is also important because nitrogen, if you read up on nitrogen is for growth and for greenliness. So if ever you see a plant in a pot that's looking a bit yellow, it's the first thing I recommend is nitrosol. It's a liquid-based nitrogen. And that just gives the plant the growth and the greenness it needs. Remember, the pots all leach out soil and that, so it's just about a balance. But the 5 is potassium, and it's a very good general fertilizer for a garden. Obviously, you want to be careful. You don't want to throw your fertilizer down onto your proteas, your indigenous plants too much. You pretty much want to go with an organic feed for those, rather. They can yield wonderful results as well. So we like to feed, check for fungal diseases and spray if needed. I always listen to Jacques, a wonderful organic Jacques. You can't, you've got to only do when you need to do it, in my opinion. Otherwise, if you've got your natural habitat right and you've got wonderful trees with birds and you've got, remember, the tiny birds will eat the aphids and the aphids. So if you create the ecosystem and you get the balance right, you can get it right. I was speaking to a guy the other day and he said to me that if you've got a lot of hardy dars in your lawn, then it generally might indicate that you've got a lot of lawn caterpillar or lawn crickets. Yes. However, on the weird flip side is I've got a lot of honeydews, but mine's actually the opposite. I've got a lot of earthworms. I hate that they take all my earthworms because earthworms are the agents for a wonderful, rich, organic soil. But my lawn's been established for years and years, and I feed.
So you've got a good lawn.
So I've got a good, healthy lawn. It doesn't just if you have plenty of honeydew, it doesn't mean that your lawn's bad either. Just it could mean the opposite. It means you've got a good amount of activity in there. As we said, I've just sort of said the same thing with the compost piles. If you in the natural environment, all the little insects break down, all that little mulch leaf and that. Same thing's happening on the ground, you know.
Yes, as you mentioned the last time we were on radio, was if you need to check to see these little creatures underneath.
Yeah, you use a bit of sunlight liquid, way to check it, you know.
And it's harmful. It's non-harmful.
So, okay. Look, we don't. It makes them not able to breathe for a very short period of time, and they quickly get to the surface to breathe. It's like you are, I suppose, suffocating them slightly.
Yeah, but they want to get up to the top
to see them. But once they come up, you know, then you know, and then you can deal with
them. And they know as well.
At least they've had a bath, you know. And then we're going to, last thing for roses, you're going to disbud if wanting larger flowers. So that's, I don't see people doing that much at the moment, but if you, so it's almost like annuals. When you want to create more flowers, you pinch out the flowers more regularly and you get an abundance of flowers. Same sort of thing, but I'm also, again, natural, let it be. If it was going to flower like that, it's going to flower like that. And my next favorite topic, lawns.
Oh, yes.
We'll do lawns quickly, and then we'll take
a music break. Yes.
And don't forget, if people want to ask any questions, Jenny Sue.
Yes. 072-447-8044.
Yeah, boy. Cool. So for lawns, lime the lawn every 2 to 4 years where the soil is very acid. So obviously lime, you clearly mentioned there, is just a balance to acid. You can get lime vermiculite. You can even get lime in a container that you would mix it with water. You can get a application spreader. It's basically like a little tube that you put into a bucket. You connect it to your hose and it creates a centrifugal pulling force and it just mixes it in. So very straightforward to do if that's what you want
to
do.
To keep your grass green, yours.
Yes.
It's hard work, isn't it?
No, it's a lot of hard work.
It's hard work. It's not like just a sprinkle here and a sprinkle there of water. It's hard work.
No, actually, it's irrigation and I cannot tell you how lucky and privileged I am to have this wonderful groundwater. We clearly, and you know, we are the valley, ironically, and I think all the mountains have given us this beautiful aquifer. I try not to pull too much for it because remember, just because it's there doesn't mean it's going to be abundant for the rest of our lives. So we all have to be cautious and not use it as much. But I water 3 times a week as deep as I can, and that just encourages good green thing. But again, you see, there's a lot more that comes with it. Talking about lawns, I suppose it's a good time to say it. I never fight grass that's not doing well. And you always have to look at your environment. If you've got trees along your north fence, for example, and there's a dead patch of grass, it's probably because the trees are providing too much shade for it. Why not just bring your bed bigger and put some beautiful shade-loving plants in there and put a border or something?
Yeah. And if you've got lots of animals, of course, they do the walk.
Yeah, 100%. So now you say that, something that I've got in my lawn, you'll notice that I've got sort of like random pavers that just come off my back stoop, for example, and will go around the bend, but literally 3 just floating in the lawn and then they just disappear. And then I've got another one that goes to a brick area that we have a little fire pit in there. But why I mention that is that's exactly where the animals run off all the time. So it's clever, those little like small things, you know, stop if it's immediate action there. Once they get off onto that area, they're going to go either way they want. But it's just about working with your lawn and not against it. And that's something that I always say. So I've got wonderful trees. I've got a wonderful tree line for my birds and that, but all my trees are raised up, so I'm getting good sun under the trees, and that's it. And then I've obviously used a wonderful lawn that I'm a very big fan of called Berea grass. It's a grass that Jeremy stocks pretty much and plugs in that, and I put that in all my deepest, shadiest areas, and it just works
very
well.
So you do suggest this grass?
Yeah. Berea grass. Definitely. I've got a north-facing wall, exactly like I just said, and in winter it pretty much gets no sun. But again, it's also a case of knowing a lot of people will cut their grass quite low. So in this month now, March to April, even specifically more April, towards the end of April, you want to really start mowing your lawns a lot higher. You want to give your lawn at least a 5 centimeter blade pile. And then what you do from there is you set your mower even a little bit higher than that. And that's what you mow once a month, if that, because the lawns start going dormant now. So there's that machine that is a wonderful machine. I mean, we use it for quite a lot, but it's called the brush cutter or a weed eater that everybody seems to know that. But those machines, if not in the right hands or not a skilled gentleman that can use it, can actually do more damage than good, because what happens is people can mow up to a certain point, but then they have to edge the lawn.
Yes.
And this is where this machine comes in. And if you've got to go to a house without being rude to anybody who's got a garden where who does his job and he works hard, don't get me wrong, these guys all work hard, they mow and then he has to use that sort of little electric machine. You'll notice that the grass is quite nice where it's been mowed, because he mows it at that height. But on the little edge, it's so short, you know, it's been cut right down. And that's because it's just, there's one height with a brush weed eater, and that's like as low as it can go. And if you're doing that now and going into April, you'll find that those particular areas don't bounce back at all strong. So I actually, in my maintenance team now, we stop cutting the edges. We actually only cut our edges once a month if it's a fortnightly client, or just to help the edges stay sustained in that sense. All these little things that can help, I think, genuinely.
Yeah. All little tips.
Yeah. And then before we get to our music break, you can apply slow acting organic fertilizer high in potassium, or use a liquid feed, sow a new lawn or oversow worn patches in an existing lawn, and then you can control winter grass now. As they say, so they are mentioning that March is getting close to winter. Just a manual weeding fork there. Also, you mentioned my grass is green. It is green, but it takes not only a chemical feed, it takes an organic feed. Because if you put too much chemical feed down all the time, you're actually going to do more damage. You're going to leach all the wonderful nutrients out. So it's just a balance, to be honest with you. Yeah. You know.
If you've just tuned in, good morning, goeiemôre, and welcome. We are busy with the Garden Zone with David Parker from Budding Inspirations. And if you have any questions for us, 072-447-8044 is most welcome. And we do have a question. Good morning. And that is Hazel. Good morning, Hazel.
Morning, Hazel.
Yes, and Hazel says, please can you advise if I should prune my lemon bush tree about 7 years old that is in a large pot? And if so, how? Thank you.
Yeah. So Hazel, yes, of course. I mean, everything loves to be pruned a little bit. You know, like a haircut, you give it a little bit of trim, it grows back a bit better. So if it's in a pot, Hazel, I'm not quite sure how all the info. So if it's been in the same pot for a long time, you might want to look at repotting it. That is an option. If not, then you can just get some wonderful liquid feed or something like that to encourage the lemon tree. We were just talking about potassium for lawns and roses. It would be good for lemon tree as well. As something that's got a nice sort of trace element, potassium in it, but definitely needing a prune. I noticed that most of the lemons have fruits on it at the moment and are growing, but a lemon tree is very much like a rose, Hazel. You want to make sure that it's not overcrowded in the middle of the tree. So you want to sort of leave your main substantial branches on the outside of it, and maybe the middle main one in the middle, and then you want to take off all the spindly little thin ones that are sort of shooting off the side branches, crossing each other. Lemons have thorns. So what happens if they're not looked after, if they cross each other and the wind blows, you can actually cause a little bit of disease because the thorns will scratch its own bark. And remember, bark is the life essence of any plant in the world. And it travels, all its nutrients travel through the bark up to the flowers and to the leaves. So you want to make sure that you sort of prune it away from itself, give each branch a little bit of breathing space. And then I'm not sure if you've got any leaf curl at the moment. It's quite common that you get a bit of leaf curl with a bit of black mite under it. So you can also use an insecticide for that. It can also be mixed up in a little jug and you can pour it on. But if you're looking, maybe take a picture and you can go down to Harry Goodman's and you'll get wonderful advice there. But yes, you can prune your lemon tree, and it is advisable to prune it.
Yeah, and also, Hazel, you can always contact David, and I'm sure he'd be willing to come and check it out for you.
100%. And I'll give my details out after the show. Yes. No problems. Lekker, so we're going to get back to what to do for the month of March. So we've just finished with lawns. So we're going to move on to flowering plants. You're going to sow Shirley poppies and other winter and spring flowering annuals now. Plant indigenous spring flowering bulbs after Easter. Did you notice that Easter's early this year? 29th of March.
I know.
I couldn't believe I was planning my boards. It's like, no, it's supposed to be in April. It's this weird mindset. So myself and my wife got married on Easter, and it's such and she was telling me this the other day. And everyone says, so when did you get married? And I said, no, we got married on Easter. And it's like, but babe, you know, Easter moves every year, which we all know, but you don't think about it. But so it's very early Easter this year. So, Binias, Freesias, Ixias, Echinus, Spiraxis, and then Watsonias can all be planted out now. It seems like in this book, they seem to use annuals as flowering plants. Remember, we got a wonderful variety of perennial indigenous flowering plants. They don't have to be indigenous. I mean, there's some. I was using a plant we can call Freylinia, beautiful purple flower. It seems to handle the salt conditions. So you just got to know what you're looking for and
so
make
David,
a choice.
So, David, besides your favorite, which is roses and grass, what other favorites do you have?
So I love clivias. Clivias come into flower at the moment now. There's a plant that I've got two growing at the back of my patio. The one is massive and it just never seems to end flowering. It's called a solanum. It's known as a potato bush. It is just spectacularly gorgeous, non-indigenous, but it's got a big purple disc flower, and I'm just absolutely loving it. And then I'm a fan of granadillas. I've been trying to grow a granadilla though, and I had a mole eat the blooming root off, so I've got to go get another one. But again, you know, I can't actually be. I mean, hydrangeas, they're just gorgeous. Yeah. I had a client who had a hydrangea was big as my head, and I got a fat head, so this thing was massive. I mean, it was incredibly beautiful. But again, you know, and that's something about nature which is incredible. You go and get something, you put it in. You try and grow it, and then literally a meter to the right of you, where you haven't tried to grow it, it's growing the best it can grow, and where you put all this love into it, it's just about finding the right spot and doing a bit of homework you know, getting your knowledge up there.
I love yesterday, today, and
the
Bonfelsias,
they are gorgeous. They are gorgeous. I've got a bush called... very hard to grow. I've got another bush called an ice cream plant. It's known as a Bryonia.
Ice cream plant.
Ice cream bush. It's got no flowers, but every leaf, it's known like because every one leaf will be white, one will be pink, one will be purple, one will be... It's incredible.
Really?
Yeah, I'll take a picture and send it to you.
Please do.
But lekker. So we're going to go on to... We've got three topics left. I'm going to move through them as quick as I can. Container plants. Look, if you live in a small area or a little flat and you've got a balcony, it's just beautiful to have something on your balcony. I'm a massive fan of indoor plants. They take a little bit more care than your outdoor plants because of the environment, but I've got a few indoor plants that just look beautiful and they just change the lounge, you know?
Yes.
So for container plants, you're going to prune your pelargoniums, except fancy leaf cultivars. Take tip and stem cuttings of pelargoniums during autumn. You can take cuttings of your heliotropin fuchsias. I see the fuchsias come back into it. Obviously, a prolifically flowering plant at the moment. Plant up pots or freezers. Feed pot plants such as cinereas and primulas for winter and spring flowering. And then reduce watering of indoor plants. Ironically, we were just talking about them.
Yes.
Obviously, it gets cooler now. So remember, any plant needs a dash of sunlight. So you've got to just put them by windows or something and they will grow for you. So vegetables and herbs, you're going to sow your winter lettuce and your Chinese cabbage at this time. So beetroot, cabbage, carrots, celery, endive, kohlrabi, leeks, parsnips, peas, spinach, Swiss chard, and turnips right now. Also, you can plant your dwarf calendulas among the vegetables and herbs. And then take cuttings of your perennial herbs and you'll feed your brassias. Something that I've always been very honest about in my business, I've never really focused on vegetables and herbs and fruits too much because they are highly temperamental plants that need a lot of care. And that's obviously why we grow them to feed and to have fruit in that. But that's why you see the farms have all the machinery in that. But so you can get some wonderful books in that. I'm not up my alley with the knowledge, but it's all there. And then fruit, you can plant citrus trees, making sure the graft is well above the ground level to prevent collar rot. Plant strawberries, continue to harvest fruit and to destroy all fallen fruit. The reason why we destroy fallen fruit is it's almost like just to stop that spread of the disease or the insects, unfortunately. And then protect ripening grapes and other fruit from bird damage and feed them all. And did you see that is us for
that
a Monday morning?
That is.
Hey,
yes.
The 4th of March. Time is flying.
A mouthful.
It's nearly Christmas already. No, I'm just teasing.
Oh, hold on. We've got something. Hello, Sharon Hauser. We've got another one. She says, my ice cream bush is looking very sad at the moment. And she showed us a picture. But I'll show David because then David can give Sharon some input.
Sad. That's like looks 15 times better than my one. my one is not looking like this. So this is actually. Sorry, I went onto it. No, Sharon. I must tell you, ma'am, that looks absolutely stunning. I mean, look at the variations in the colours and everything. My one is not looking so good because I've just recently moved it from a pot plant into my open garden, and I think I'm getting a bit too much sun on it. So,
I think Sharon's got green fingers because look at her orchids. Her orchids are beautiful, and now she says that's looking sad to me. And like you said, it looks happy.
No, it looks happy. So I think if I'm zooming in on it, I think what you're talking about, Sharon, is if I look past the sort of more pinky flowering plants, you're looking at the white leaves that look a little bit mottled, and I see one or two yellow in there. I just actually think what's happened here is your bush is quite the growth of the bush is quite big, so it could be just keeping its moisture and it's got its own little environment in there. So you might want to thin it out a little bit. And if you're really worried about it, then we've been talking liquid feeds and that. Maybe put a little bit of nitrosil onto it with a dash of 315. The nitrosil will help the green and the yellow leaves to turn a bit more green. And then obviously the 5 being a potassium, that 3 will help the rest of the bush grow. But I'm going to keep that as a picture and pretend it's my one.
All right, Sharon says thank you.
Thank you, Sharon.
And she says she will do. So, Lekker. David, it is time for us to say thank you.
Goodbye. Adios, amigo. You keep saying that. I said. And then I'm just going to give out my number just in case anybody wants to contact, you know, just to chat about anything. So it's David Parker, 073-247-0351. And my email address is my business name. It's buddinginspirations@gmail.com. Okay.
And David, we'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks' time with Jeremy. Ciao. Thanks, too. Bye.
Have a lekker day. Bye.
This gardening feature was brought to you by Harry Khumans Garden Center.
Hi, I'm Jeremy, owner of Harry Khumans Garden Center, and I'd like to invite you to come and experience some genuine retail therapy at our special garden center, where our friendly and knowledgeable staff are waiting to help you. Come and find the perfect plant, beautiful pot, compost, potting or specialized soils, products to solve a pesky insect or fungal garden infection, and so much more. We strive to have a wide range and fair pricing. We're looking forward to seeing you soon at Harry Khumans Garden Center.